Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
Okay, super excited to introduce Dr. Alu Taiwu. He teaches in acting, immersive and digital performances, as well as physical theater at the University of Winchester. He has a background in fine art, street dance, African percussion, physical theater, martial arts, Tai Chi Chuan, and animal spirit movement. He's performed in national and international contexts, pioneering concepts surrounding practices as research. This includes how practice can explore the relationships between effort, performance, and performative actions. Consequently, his aim is to propagate issues concerning the interaction between the body, identity, audience, street, and technology in the digital age. In this session, Dr. Alu Taiwu will introduce participants to a presentation that integrates theory and practice, demonstrating to how we can embody the return beat, defined as a metaphysical experience of West African rhythm, insights from which will draw from a paradigm that assumes consciousness of an integrated planet. If you have questions, you can click on the raise hand icon at the bottom of the screen. And for any other questions during the session, please type them in the Q&A box. Check to see if your question has already been asked. If it has already been asked, you can upvote it and I'll pass them along to our presenter at the right time. For any technology questions, you can type in the chat privately to Svetlana, our tech host. Okay, without further ado, I pass the mic on over to Dr. Alu Taiwu. Looks very exciting. I already see the instruments. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay, so first I need to just check. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. I can hear you.
Yeah, is that cool? And you can see, because I've got a kind of a camera. Good, excellent. Okay, we'll go. Thank you very much for that wonderful introduction.
Amazing.
Welcome everybody to my session. I want to say I'm really honored to be asked to be in this session. It's quite a little complex session that I'm going to try and articulate because it deals with paradigms of thinking and paradigms of being, which hopefully will come clear. But before I start, I'm going to drum for you. I'm using a djembe, which is, this particular djembe comes from the Gambia, but the djembe is used right across West Africa, particularly in areas like Mali, Senegal, and the Gambia. And it's also a drum that a lot of people have been using now. It's become quite famous around the world. Please don't try to understand what I'm trying to say with the drums at the moment. It's just a gift It's a gift from me to you, and it's also a gift to the ancestors, whoever they may be with you, and a gift to the unborn that's in this space. And it's very much a kind of a West African thing. So this is not, this is outside of the Western tradition. And I'm not, yeah, don't try and understand it. Just feel and experience it. And there we are. And then we can go on from there. So what I'm going to be talking about, that's the rhythms that I used there were from Nigeria, where my parents come from. My name is Olubenga, full name, Olubenga Olushola Elijah Taiwo. And that's a name that sort of hails from the Yoruba, Ijebu Yoruba people. I was born in Clapham, London. I'm a Londoner, South London boy. But of course, I'm in contact with my kind of ancestral roots, a lot of which I had to sort of excavate for myself in some ways because of colonialism and the shape and the power of Western hegemony. So it meant that I really needed to sort of excavate to find out those things, those untold stories that were part of my own personal discourse. So just to sort of focus a little bit on why the return beat and what the return beat is within the context of my kind of history. So just a short background. My background is in fine art. I started my first degree in fine art, and then I went into performance art. And I moved from there into really exploring movement. And that's when I came across Laban, Rudolf Laban. And then I decided, as a result of acting and performing in the West Country, I decided to go and do my master's at the Laban Center. Now, Laban, there are many different aspects to Rudolf Laban's work. But the two main aspects are his work on choreotics. Choreotics, translated, is the relationship between the body and space from the performer's perspective. So when you deal with space, you start from the performer's body, and then you you think that's the starting point, and then you have the kind of issue outside, you know, the length of the body in terms of space. And with that, he describes inclinations, angles, and pathways. Inclinations, angles, and pathways with the different limbs, both as a holistic form or in terms of direction. The other aspect of his work, and there are others as well, but we'll focus on these two, is eukinetics. Eukinetics is basically effort, effort qualities, effort, effort qualities, But there's a particular aspect of effort that I think he highlights in his readings and his writings, which is that effort links, a bit like Kandinsky, where he talks about the inner necessity. So the inner necessity, the body's ability to create movement. And actually, when you're standing still or sitting still, your body is full of effort. So your heart's beating, your various organs are going, and your cells are reproducing. So there's the effort to life. So life is a kind of effort. But of course, when we lift our arm into a position, it requires effort. And he described it quite nicely in that, you know, if you take a rock and you drop the rock has no ability to arrest its movement. It just falls. And when it's arrested is when it falls to the ground. But if I drop my arm, I have an infinite number of positions where I can arrest it. The arresting, the point in which I'm stopping and resisting gravity, the thing that causes that is effort. So effort has a direct link to consciousness. Consciousness, causality, effort. And therefore, we have movement and the qualities of movement. And he describes, I don't want to go through the whole thing now because it's a whole series of theories and practice. But essentially, he breaks it down into four areas. So first, the idea of effort requires flow. So he was operating around the time Einstein had discovered this notion of space-time, or discovered, or uncovered, I should say. So that space-time as a fabric, so that the space between us, the space between objects that appear separate, actually is part of that joined thing. It's this the flux of space, the fact that space has some kind of materiality to it. And so so if there's density, then flux of space-time condenses. And if there's no speed and there's no large body, then space-time is relaxed. So it's like a sponge, this kind of quality of space-time. Well, Laban took that notion of flux and the space as the thing that we move. And another thing which I think is just important, and this links into the kind of the workshop I'll be doing in a minute, is that effort is very, even though we know this is not the truth now, science has proved this in a number of different areas, but we still see ourselves as objects, or objects that carry subjective material and subjective ideas in space. So we see ourselves in space moving in a kind of vacuum or a kind of emptiness. This, of course, the emptiness that we're projecting is, of course, a projection. That's our brains interpreting what our visual stimuli is collecting from the out there-ness. We really have no idea of what is out there. There are many frequencies and forms and atoms and qualities, neutrinos and different ultraviolets as we go wider and wider in the spectrum, that exist in the space that we, our senses, can't pick up. So what we're essentially looking at is our projection of what is out there. So he took this notion of flux in space and said that, so flow being the fundamental material by which we work with movement and effort. So again, effort is a pen that we draw and make impressions in this flux. So you're saying that you can take flow and give it weight and give it energy. So weight will be weight, structure, resistance. So with that weight, you create a sense of heaviness or resistance. And then the converse to that is lightness. So you have weight rhythms that come from weight, heavy to light, heavy to light. So, and that kind of relates to the body. It relates to the earth, if you're looking at it in terms of elements. The next thing, I'm running through this quite quickly because of time, but the next one is you can take flow, this flux we're talking about, and you can hurry it. You can hurry it and make quick movements. So quick, sudden movements, which spring out of a dash. Or you can have sustained movement, which is just basically a continuum. And that between, and that creates time rhythms. And interestingly, that relates to the sense of time, the sense of the spirit that we exist or existence. Spirit, spirit obviously links much more towards if you're a spiritual person or if you're a Christian or Islam, Muslim, or if you're Buddhist, you have this notion of the spirit. But if you're atheist, then it will just be existence. The fact that we exist, that which causes existence is related to time, and that either hurry or slow sustained. So then that creates time rhythms. So of course, these are all enmeshed. We're talking about things, this is a way of analyzing the space using these particular forms. Interestingly, these actually come from ancient Hellenic ideas. So these are not new ideas, but what he's done, like a lot of 20th century and 19th century philosophers and artists, they took some of these ancient ideas and made them accessible to a modern world. So we have time rhythms. So then you have these time rhythms which create a kind of sense of fast, quick, or sustained. So you have heavy, light, quick, or sustained. And then you have the next one, which I quite like, and this goes back to what I was saying about space. Space rhythms. Now, when we say space, we're not talking the flux of space-time. So our notions of space are a projection in space-time. So this is something which I want to sort of make clear within the context of kind of Laban theory. So space can be given direction. So remember, we're talking from the performance perspective. So it is subjective, but there is a way of describing the internal terrain of our subjectivity that we can agree on. And this is what this is about in some ways. So the direction is being direct, so focused, linear, and direct. He calls it thread-like. Thread-like is directed, focused. And this is a way of treating space. So it is that part of us when we, we suddenly see our keys, there it is, and you head towards them. So it's direct. And everything else kind of defocuses out because you're in that focus. So there's direct, and then there's flexible. So flexible is when you defocus from a central point and just widen your vision and experience the space, the space that you are perceiving. And interestingly, when you defocus and experience a space that you're in, what you are experiencing is a kind of, you are allowing your senses to pick up those things which you can't perceive. So things like proprioception, sense of the atmosphere, all those things come into bear because you're no longer direct and they're focused and goal orientated. You are now in the space which is flexible and open and defocused. So he calls those space rhythms. So in terms of movement, when you start to combine those, you get what he calls the 8 effort actions. Now, I won't go into that now because of time, but those 8 effort actions are a way of learning how to play with those particular effort actions so that we increase our sensitivity to movement, which is what he's about in a lot of ways, as well as articulating movement and dance and the way in which we move. It's about articulating and analyzing movement itself, the fundamental nature of movement, and increasing our sensitivity to it. So one of the things in the eukinetics is this notion of those things that organize movement when you're choreographing or when you're performing movement. And the ones we learned at the Laban Center, one was effort. Those of you who do Laban will know this. You have time, you have effort or effort actions, or actions, action rhythms. So action rhythm is basically when you organize your movements based on actions. So I am picking up my mobile phone and then I put it down. That's an action. And I can abstract that action and put it somewhere else and juxtapose it with different actions. So I'm standing up, oh, I'm sitting down, and I'm waving. So it's just action rhythms which are performed, and with manipulation, you can create phrases that follow the rhythms of actions. And a lot of contemporary performances work with action rhythms, whether it's in a kind of way of articulating the real, or if you're talking about physical theater where you're articulating a character in some way. So action rhythms are really particular way of organizing movement. So this is organizing movement, so organizing effort. So therefore you can start to organize these forces of flow. The last one I'm gonna mention is flow rhythms, which is the fourth one. And flow is the nature of flow itself. The nature of the flux that we're talking about. So now this is a really beautiful link, because essentially with flow rhythms, what we are engaging is breath. So I'll just recollect. Weight, you give weight or lightness to create weight rhythms. You hurry and speed, quick and sustained to create time rhythms. Direct or flexible to create space rhythms. With flow, you hold your breath, in breath. And when you hold, you pause, you become bound. And there's a binder. So it's a bit like where another way to sort of think about it is like a massive body at the center of our galaxy binds the space-time which all the stars' systems rotate around. So a body, massive body, binds. It breathes in and holds. This is the binding. There's a breath. And when you breathe out, you create free movements. So it's very important in terms of, there's a choreographer in the 60s and 70s called Doris Humphreys, who really used this notion of sort of release and flow as a way that traces the profile of breath, the fall and recovery. So you fall and you recover, and that quality of breath signifies and organizes effort. So that's the bound. So now, so going back to the rhythms, the first rhythm was, as I mentioned, action rhythm, various actions done as they would be done, taken out of context and played with and juxtaposed to create phrases based on these particular actions. Then you have breath rhythm, which is what I've just mentioned now about the binding and flow held in. The breath rhythm is where you use the breath as an organizing factor for movement. So you could say, for example, in terms of the body awareness, yoga is a very good example of using breath to organize movement. That is a way in which we breathe in to take in the universe, as it were. We hold and pause and then release. And there's a kind of psychosomatic relationship with the body and a biochemistry relationship in that kind of context. But in terms of just movement, a classic example is release technique, where there's a lot of thing about giving into the ground and releasing the body and then holding and binding and releasing. So these are breath rhythms, a way of organizing movement. And the next one is metric, which those who do jazz or that kind of thing, where you go, basically you say, right, okay, now this, so if I take a couple of movements, if I'm doing action rhythm, the action rhythm here, I'm gonna pick up my phone and then just do this and then put it down again. That will be action rhythm. Breath rhythm with me, I might go. So now I'm using that to organize a rhythm. The metric rhythm will be, right now I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So now I'm using time and a count to organize rhythm. So it's used a lot in synchronizing kind of complex jazz movements or even contemporary dance movements where you're trying to synchronize moments. So those are the those are the three ones we're taught. Now, the ones, and then I came along and thought, at Laban Center, and I thought, well, what about the African rhythm? That is our sensibility, the return beat. And all along, my lecturers were saying, well, no, it's metric rhythm because Africans use counts. And I said, no, it's not the same because metric rhythm is teleological. Metric rhythm is we count one, two, three, four in a line. It's not the way we perceive it in Africa. Now, I want to be clear about this. Where we are talking about different paradigms of seeing space-time, so I'm going back to this notion of this fabric of space, and that space, as we perceive it, is a projection. If it's a projection, then we have a paradigm model with which we use to project into space-time. And different cultures and different paradigms have different ways of projecting their vision or the ideas of space. That is the way space actually is, not just how we might see it. So I was saying that no, it's not the same. We have a different way of looking at space-time. So at this point, I'm gonna just share, I'm hoping we can do this. So you can help me out, guys, if it's not working. That's what I'm looking at. So I'm hoping, can you all see that? Is this okay? Yeah?
Yes, we can see it.
Good. So I'm just going to, I just need to go back. Oh, what's that? Sorry, it's not, that wasn't on the, there we are. Okay, so I'm just gonna take you through this now. So I was just talking about this idea of time. So another concept which I just wanted to introduce you to, as it will help us to understand, is that, so we have this notion here now of space and time. So that means information is coming into my eyes, it's coming into my body, my brain interprets that in a closed, our skull is closed, and therefore whatever we project, what we see is constructed inside, and then we project it out into the judged location. That's what we perceive. So our perception is a kind of construction. And that construction comes out of what I'm calling a physical journal. So I moved away from using the lived body because it has so many connotations. I want to say physical journal. And a definition of that is embodied knowledge and memory, which requires an organizational intelligence to project its presence through our lived bodies. So this physical journal is a result of our corporate real projections that write and rewrite new information into our living system. So when we learn a new skill or new perception, that gets written into our physical journal and then we embody it. So this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. You can read that in your, as you go. So this diagram here is a kind of a culmination of my particular model for the return beat and the physical journal, because the two things are linked. Okay, so because of time, I want to just do this. So this is in terms of proximity. So this, what I'm showing you now is the choreotic aspect of Laban's work, but I have reinterpreted it a little bit to encompass this notion of space, as it were. So you have these particular levels here, and these levels are, that is the central, there's a return beat, so it's the center. I mean, if you do Tai Chi or you do kind of Ten Tian, you know, it's all about Ahara, this center. Center is the core. And that circle, this circle here, is a circle with which, when you're organizing movement, you're having to really deal with your core and your core muscles, all those core muscles and so forth. Then we go on to this area here, which is a temporal space. This is the contracted. So when we're dealing with space as constructed from the center of the body, the core, then everything that is in around my sphere that is elbow length, you know, if you're doing that tree pose in Qigong, or if you are in martial arts, you operate within this internal core. So you've got the return beat, which is the central core, then you have your internal core. This is where you're intimate, you're up close and intimate in this kind of space here, and it's around in that kind of sphere. So then next we have, then from here, you have the outer core. So this is now where we open up into expression. So here, we do a lot of our kind of internal communications, but when we go out here, now we're expressing, we're doing a wider pushing away or bring it in. So it's kind of expanded body. So there's a kind of, but it's still within our body. This is the key thing, that even though this is the physical body interface with the skin, here we have the body, which is now based on our kinesphere. Lavan called it the kinesphere, the movement sphere. I've renamed it for myself because it links into other things. So then you have the kinesphere, then outside of my reach, I have my movement sphere. So this is the sphere of the living body. So it's general space. So if I want to move, I have to move the whole physical journal into the general space. And that general space is, I mean, just to remind you, Einstein was very clear when he said that the body isn't the body in space, but space extended as the body. So we are space in condensed and contracted and fractured form. So this is the general temporal space inside the external area. So those are the kinds of spaces. So now we have these two areas here, which is about the perceptual membrane. So we know this, and if we had time in a space, we could do exercises where I could demonstrate your awareness of these particular perceptual membranes. These membranes which are part of us, and we can resensitize ourselves to that so that we come into contact and they link to our kinesthetic and our skin. So that's the kind of physical journal linking to the space. Now, when we get to effort, so here I want to do this. This is when I want to start this particular exercise. So what I would like you to do, and I'm just checking the time, is if you can be, if you're sitting down on a chair, just to come away from your back on the back of the chair so that you're sitting a little bit further onto the chair, onto your sit bone, and make your feet as much as comfortable as possible underneath your knees, so it's relaxed. And if you're sitting on your sit bone, you raise the small of your back. So I imagine you've done a number of these already if you've been attending some of the other workshops in terms of embodiment. Dropping your shoulders. And we're going to do is just rub our hands and cup them like so. So you cup them like this. This is just to stop your hands getting... Now, this is important because we would do this exercise in a group so we can look at phase alignment. But we can't do this in a group because we're all separate in different spaces around the world, which is fantastic. So this is going to be an intimate experience for yourselves. So you're looking at your subjective experience. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to clap in a tempo. Here's the clap. So you're clapping the air, just like so. Good, that's it, right? So hold on there. Now, how do we organize? We're talking about this organizing principle. So I'm looking at, we talked about breath rhythm, we talked about action rhythms, and metric. I'm looking at the difference between metric rhythm and the return beat. That's what I'm looking at. And these two highlight a paradigm shift or a paradigm difference. Now, it's very important for you to be clear. My presumption is that we live in a garden of paradigms. The texture of temporal space in the universe is more than capable of supporting multiple paradigms. So the Western linear paradigm isn't the only one. And unfortunately, it's become the dominant one. And that's the point I'm coming to. So we're not talking about getting rid or negating it. It's just saying, hold on, there are other ways of constructing the world and perceiving the world. So it's between metric rhythm and the return beat. So here we go. So we've got here, this is the linear flux. So this is a linear projection. So what this is the image I want you to have in your mind. So I'm giving you an image that most of you will recognize. This is the metric drive of linear flux. So what you're having here is your temporal drive. That is, you have the points in which the beats occur, and you have the distance or the space between the beats. The points in which the beats occur and the space between the beats. And here we have the bar of four. And this is great. Those of you editing or sound editing, you'll know that this is the timeline is crucial, and you can break things up and play with all sorts of wonderful things. So this is a great model for that thing. So what I'm gonna do now is we're gonna clap, and I want you to hold that image in your mind. We're gonna clap one, two, three, four, and then continue. And as you continue, just observe what happens while you're doing it. Okay, so ready. And go. And you go. So carry on. Okay, and then stop. Okay, so normally I would be able to hear it, but because I can't, it's okay. I'm just imagining it. So so the space is, you have a beat, and then the drive is forward. So this, within Laban's context, is direct. You're going somewhere. There's a direction. So it's teleological. That is, it occurs with an end target of some kind, or maybe there isn't an end target, but usually there's some kind of, here's the end, beginning, middle, and end. Okay, good. Now, let's just keep that paradigm and move it across to over here. We're gonna come back to it later. That's that paradigm. Now we're gonna go to the return beat paradigm. Now, here you'll see a different kind of focus. What we have here is I'm still using a bar of four. Of course, if it's three, it'll be three petals. If it's, you know, seven, you know, of course, number is number. So, but I'm using four as a kind of, as a standard for now, for the exercise. Okay, now, just to give you a bit of a heads up, what you have is, in West African perceptions of time, you have a zero. There's instinctively a zero. Usually with the Western, you start on one. The bit before is a preparation. You prepare, are you ready? And then you go. In classical music, you go. And then da-da-da-da-da. And then the narrative unfolds. With African drumming, you start with a zero. You don't start with the one. The bit before isn't the preparation. The start is a zero. And then you have a centrifugal expansion. It goes out and then comes back, and that coming back is a return beat. So an image I'd like you to think about is when you have still water on a pond, maybe at dusk, and it's like maybe the moon just begin to come out, and you've got that reflection on the still water, and there is dew drops, maybe, or maybe it's just been raining and there's a drop of water that falls and disturbs the tranquility of the surface. And then as a drop comes down, ripples come out. And then the next one comes down and hits the same point, but it's not the same point because the last point has rippled out. This is disturbance of the return beat flux. That is, time isn't seen as a teleological going somewhere. It's time is something which unfolds and expands, unfolds and expands. So we're gonna clap, but this time you start with a zero, and the imagine like a magnet. So as I expand, I explain I'm pulling away the magnets, the two north and south poles. I'm pulling away, and there's a kind of resistance, and that is a centrifugal. And then when I return, that's a centripetal, and that's the return beat. So that would be one, and then the next one, two. So each time there is this pull like so, okay? So I want you to have that in your mind. I'm gonna have a go at that. Are we ready? This is another paradigm, here we go. And we start with zero, zero. And continue. Okay, so stop there. Now, we would, if we were all together in the same space, sharing the same temporal space, we would have the added thing of phase alignment. And I know there is work going on to try and phase align collective work on, you know, using technology. Because, of course, time delays and the speed of light moving from one instrument to another instrument means that we can't all clap together, which is significant, because being together means that we can phase align, and with that comes the kind of resonance. Anyhow, just to give you a kind of like what you might have felt, and people feel different things, so it's just not like you should feel this. It may be interesting to get some feedback later on. I'll try and leave enough time to get the feedback. Generally, what happens is, with a linear drive, there is a tendency, and I found this with groups, it's more pronounced in groups. When you're clapping in a group, in a linear drive, the tendency is to go faster, because there is an inbuilt desire to want to get to the end. So we start to accelerate. And I think it's natural with that perception. So how that gets moderated with classical music quite skillfully is with a conductor. A conductor can maintain and speed up the tempo, you know, with that linear drive, so that you can have these multiple timelines, multiple lines of sound to be phased aligned to create the emotion. So a linear drive essentially forces us in a direct manner. In contemplating what is created, we may have a flexible moment, we expand. But the kind of playing, and this is, remember, we're talking from the performance perspective, the playing is getting through it. Now, there is a beauty in direct, because you can get into a trance. You can, there's a, you know, and Einstein put it beautifully, the faster you go, yeah, the faster, you know, time speeds up or slows down. So it's an interesting thing with time and speed. That's a very real thing. So just because we can't see the effects when we're walking or when we're sitting down, doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It's just very minute. It's incredibly minute, but there is a change in space-time. Okay, so that's the linear drive. With the curved flux and the return beat, hopefully you find something, when it returns, the kind of satisfaction of coming back to the body. So the linear drive tends to get us into the mind. It's a cognitive response. I've got to maintain that focus. With a curved flux, it forces you to come back to the body. and come back to experiencing the moment as it unfolds. This is the key thing about African rhythm. And that's what I played for you just earlier on when I did the kind of thing. I'm not playing, I'm not creating flows in time. I am creating flowers in the moment, things that unfold. And so this is the key thing. And usually when when people experience it in a group, there's a kind of, it's easier to maintain and to keep the tempo because it's the body becomes a metronome rather than the mind, which wants to go further. That's crucial. Now, of course, already hopefully you'll start to see some of the inherent problems that can emerge from a linear-based practice without some conductor to maintain and to control the tempo. What we had is through a kind of what we're seeing with the digital revolution now, which is just accelerating in an exponential way, because that's the nature of it. Whereas those things which are much more to do with bringing back to the body are more sustained and work in a kind of partnership, because you're the whole idea about working in a return beat is that we as a group maintain the tempo, and the tempo is in phase alignment with nature around us. We're not direct and ignoring things because of a kind of a journey, but that we are participating in the flux of nature. And I'm just checking the time. I am so enjoying myself, people, you have no idea, but I can't see you, but I can feel you, which is really good. And thank you for your projections. Now, I'm not gonna go too much into these because this is good of time, and I'd like to leave some time for some maybe questions and feelings. This is just sort of some of my musings around, if you think back to the position of the kinesphere, that this quality here, coming back here, coming back to the center. So the center is a bit like a magnet in that the south pole is the center, and then kinesphere is the north. Is out there. And so there's this flux that comes in and out, like this sort of, and it's a bit like a torus. If those of you are familiar with complex mathematics in geometry, it's like a torus, which by the way, a torus is what all living beings are. You know, I have my food comes into my mouth, it's in, I breathe in, and then it goes in through a channel, and then various things happen inside here, and then the things I don't need gets rejected out. And right to the most primal single-celled animals, they'll have some kind of, like a snail, a worm. It has a mouth, and it has something which it gets rid of stuff. So that's the torus I'm talking about. So this is a kind of a model of that this is about the way we breathe and pull back to the center. And the rhythm works with that. So let me give you an example. I'll just play a little bit and then you'll see. I don't want to do it with the drums, but here. So if I go, so now I've got that return beat. That's this, and so things like funk, soul, jazz, Afrobeat. I mean, from African rhythm, this goes back, thousands of years. This heartbeat model of rhythm goes back thousands of years and still, like plants, still exist now in different forms. The problem, I think, with, and this comes down to this idea of the research into ecology, and maybe you're already starting to see some of the kind of connections. is that when you talk to the Hopi Indians, for example, or the Brahmins of India, or some of the Taoist masters, I practice Tai Chi Chuan, and I'm very, very grateful for learning classical Yang form, short form, through the lineage of Chen Manqing. Taoist, and also the Babalawos in Nigeria, and a lot of Babalawos in Cuba, and in Cuba with Santeria, and Candomblé in Brazil. And also this in New Orleans, there's a lot of the understanding of the Babalawos in that area, who understand that we are partners in nature. And that when we play rhythms, we join in the rhythmic structure of the world. I remember that one of the first things that I was told by Musa Suma, who was a Guinea master drummer from Guinea. I remember asking him when I was just starting out to drum, I said to him, so what's rhythm then? You know, in my usual Western way. I'd be like, what's rhythm? Tell me what the meaning of rhythm is. And he sort of looked at me in a kind of quizzical way of knowing full well that this is a Western direct question. I want to know the magic of rhythm, because he can play rhythm in a beautiful way. And I wanted to know how he did that. He stood up and started to tap his keys in rhythm and said, that's rhythm, and then walked off. And I thought that was beautiful in some ways, because it was kind of not dismissive in the way like, oh God, you asked me that question again. But just trying to say that rhythm is life. It's everywhere. If you're standing up, moving around, what you're doing, the rhythms of nature, the rhythms of the period for a woman, the rhythms of the moon, rhythms of the sun, the rhythms of the planets going around the sun, and how that affects our sense of lived space, rhythms of the day and night. Rhythms of our habits. All these are rhythms. And when we can be partners with the rhythmic structure of the world, then we can become in phase alignment. But unfortunately, my feeling is that the West linearity kind of needs to pull back and start to see itself as a partner in nature, rather than nature as a kind of a resource for cheddar, you know, food. I can just cut things up. Anyway, we're running out of time. I'll just stop there. I don't know if we've got time for any questions, and I'll probably stop there.
Thank you so much. We don't have time for questions, but we can definitely continue this conversation. Amazing stuff. On the Facebook group, there is a private group that was created for the Ecology and Research channel, and also the main embodiment conference group on Facebook as well. We also typed in the chat Olu's information. And thank you so much, Dr. Olu Taiwu, really for that incredible explanation and exploration of the return beats and guiding us. Even if it's a quick exercise, it was very powerful to experience the unfolding of the moment in our bodies. That was, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I do apologize. I would like to, it's just, because we're online, it felt like it, to try and do a workshop that really requires us to be together, it might be misinterpreted. So I felt like it would be better to explain it and have a short taste.
It was so perfect. It was so great. And seeing from the chat, also from the feedback, we felt it, we experienced it. Thank you so much. Again, everybody, if you would like to continue and to connect, please join the Facebook group and share your learning and your experience on this journey together. Our next session, everyone is invited to Carly Ko and Unifying with Diversity. How do we live diversity within our bodies? And if you are an embodiment geek like me, you may be tempted to force feed yourself all these yummy sessions in a short amount of time. but you can purchase the entire library of the Embodiment Conference for yourself to digest in your own time. It is also an amazing gift and to the world that your purchase allows these live sessions to be free and accessible to everyone else. And it is also an incredible thank you to all of us. And one last question for Olu.
Yes.
What is your top tip to stay embodied?
Listen. I would say listen. That's the biggest thing, to listen, and listen with the whole body, not just with the ears. Listen with your feelings. Listen with your soul instincts. Listen with the with the resonance. You know, our body is amazing. When we are able to step away from thinking that we are the center of the world, that we are part of the world, then we can listen. And the world and the universe is waiting to send in so much information. It's like just waiting. It's just a case of us noticing it.
Amazing, thank you. Wow, a great and powerful reminder for deep embodied listening. Thank you so much, Dr. Olu Taiwu, and everybody else who joined from around the world for this powerful session together. Thank you so much. Looking forward to more learning and embodiment together. Bye, everyone. Thank you so much again.
Bye.